Hey gang, welcome to the show. Welcome to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. Go to RBN, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the donate button and keep free speech alive. Keep hope alive. Have you ever heard that before? Anybody know where that came from? But keep free speech alive. Go to nationalbugle.com. Download the Koshertified app. We don't need to lead a Koshertified lifestyle. Let's lead a non-kosher certified lifestyle. That's what we should do. Okay. George from Greece is going to be calling in momentarily. And he's got all sorts of things he wants to talk about. He wants to talk about, I guess the new Ottoman Empire. Did you know that there's a new Ottoman Empire? And you would think a Greek would be very alarmed at that. Not necessarily so much. We'll see. Because, earlier this year, I started memeing that we would rather be ruled over by Chinamen than Jews. My Skype handle or whatever, it's Making America China Again Since 2019. Not that we want to be ruled over by Chinamen, but would rather be ruled over by Chinamen than Jews. And I don't know exactly what George from Greece has to say. We're expecting him to call in. But I do expect, I wouldn't be surprised if he would rather be ruled over by a new Ottoman Empire than the old Zionist Empire. That's not going from the, from the fire to the frying pan. That's going from the fire to maybe a sauna. I don't know. It's better. It's an improvement, a definite improvement. Okay, and then he doesn't call in right away. We do have, this is a call-in show today. It's live, and the number here at republicbroadcasting.org is 1-800. I think I've got it memorized. 1-800-313-9443. 1-800-313-9443. So there's all sorts of stuff going on. There is the whole Epstein thing, and I want to keep that alive, but at the same time don't want people to get too tired of it, too sick of it. It's a big, big deal. This could very easily be the thing that unravels that whole that whole hornet's nest that we're in. But we have George from Greece. George, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Dr. Slattery. How are you doing this morning?
Fine, and I was looking forward to your call. I unfortunately missed the bulk of your call on Tuesday, so I've invited you to call back today. And you had a bunch of things.
Yes.
So, but first off, maybe you heard my little introduction. Would you rather be ruled over by the Ottomans than the Jews? That's my first question.
Well, it's two sides of the same coin, I guess.
Is it? Okay.
Because both the Ottoman Empire and the Turkish state modern project was initiated by Jewish imagined and initiated in Jewish minds, especially the modern Turkey is an absolutely Turkish project. Jewish project. So it's two sides of the same coin, I guess.
I know a lot of the Young Turks. I know a lot of the Young Turks were from Salonika or Thessalonica, yes, which at the time was about 40% Jewish, and you would think that the elite from there would either be Jewish or, like our non-Jewish elite, would be kind of ingratiated to the Jews. And some of these Young Turks, if you look at their biographies, were openly Jewish. Others seem to be more crypto-Jews. So is that what you're getting at when you say that the modern Jewish state was imagined by Jews?
Absolutely. First of all, when the Jews got expelled from Spain in 1492 by Isabella and Ferdinand, On threat of they were either going to, you know, convert to Christianity or be expelled or face death. So they got expelled, and many of them left Spain, and they ended up in the Ottoman Empire. And the Ottoman Empire by that time was actually two cities, was Istanbul or Constantinople, and of course Thessalonica. So they settled down in Thessalonica mainly, and many of them went to Istanbul. And those that ended up in Thessalonica ended up also dominating commerce, and they ended up forming a vast majority of the population within that city. Jews in general within the Ottoman Empire were highly they were warmly welcomed by the Sultan. When he heard the news that they were being expelled from Spain, they were warmly welcomed.
Okay,
by
so there you're talking about the late 1400s.
That's 1492. Yes.
Yeah, late 1400s. Okay, and you know, there's all sorts of historical data on that, and in fact, now both Spain and Portugal have offered the descendants of Jews who left Iberia for the Ottoman Empire. They've offered them citizenship as Spaniards or as Portuguese if they can demonstrate that that's their ancestry.
Specifically, Spain formed a formal apology towards the State of Israel for expelling the Jews in 1492. That was 4 or 5 years ago. Juan Carlos enunciated this kind of formal apology. It was big news 4 or 5 years ago. Groveling. So,
do you think maybe in a few hundred years that the government of India might issue a formal apology to the British for having expelled them? I'm just asking.
I don't think so. This is only kosher related stuff. So the Jews in the Ottoman Empire enjoyed a high level of protection on behalf of the formal state. They occupied pretty high positions in the Ottoman government regarding finances and economic policy of the empire. And they pretty much dominated the empire in what has to do with money. So when the Ottoman Empire collapsed in 1920, in the beginning of the 1920s, the young Turks from Thessalonica, who, for your information, they were called in Turkish, they were called Donme. Donme in Turkish means Islamized Jew. Yes.
Okay, I have two questions. The first is, had the position of Jews declined at all in the, say, 1800s and early 1900s within the Ottoman Empire, or had it remained strong? That's the first question.
I wouldn't say that. Their numbers remained pretty high, especially
within the... And
their
influence remained strong?
Not so strong as in the beginning of their presence there, but they remained pretty strong. I mean, in Thessalonica, they were the main element there, and they pretty much dominated the whole system within that city. But they were concentrated in urban areas.
I ask that because if you look at the history of the Soviet Union, the Jews were completely dominated it earlier on, and it's not as if their position was that weak towards the end. Yuri Andropov, who was the one of the last presidents, was Jewish himself, but it had certainly declined. And then after the breakup of the Soviet Union, their position was much, you know, they had a much stronger position after the breakup. I was wondering if there's any analogy there. But
go forth, bark at the intruders.
Thank you for your service. Go on.
The
other question was just, you know, looking at maps, the I know the southern peninsula of modern Greece achieved independence from the Ottoman Empire earlier than that northern Macedonian shore, which I guess would be where Salonika is. Was Salonika,
yes.
When did that become part of the Greek Republic?
Okay, Macedonia is actually a Greek name. It was being occupied from time immemorial by Greek tribes. It's a Greek it's a Greek entity, Macedonia. Okay, everybody knows Macedonia is Greek. Alexander the Great was an ambassador of Greek civilization towards his conquest of Central Asia and stuff. And everybody knows that. Macedonia was liberated in the 1910s, okay? So about 90 years after mainland Greece was liberated from the Ottoman Empire. It was during the War of Macedonian Independence in 1912 that we got back Macedonia and Thessalonica as its center. So Thessalonica was liberated from the Ottomans in 1912.
Became
Greek
so,
again.
And the Young Turk movement, did the Young Turk movement start before World War One? It started,
yes,
didn't it start
it started
about that same
War,
time?
Yes, there were many intellectuals, Turkish intellectuals, starting from the late 19th century, when the Ottoman Empire started imposing on its subjects the policy of Tanzimat, the so-called Tanzimat, which in Turkish meant modernization. They tried to modernize the Ottoman state in all manners and effects, so that they could face the rise of Western powers and they actually tried to save the empire by modernizing it. They called that effort Tanzimat. And there were many Turkish intellectuals by that time that were writing about Turkish nationalism, something previously unknown within mm-hmm. the Ottoman Empire intelligentsia.
What is it that you wanted to bring up today? Was it more what's going on modern, or did you want to go back into this history?
Well, I was interested in talking about Turkish adventures in Syria, their relations with Russia, the whole venture of neo-Ottomanism, and the possible outcome of all this in regard to very substantial and deep-rooted ties with the Jewish international element and the Jewish element in general. Turkey, I don't think Turkey will ever be able to unhinge itself from its Jewish intellectual roots, being a Jewish project of the early 20th century. So I think that Turkey's rapprochement with Russia is pretty much it's something that is going to fade away pretty soon, and we're going to be looking at a Turkey that's going back to embracing the United States, Israel, and Atlanticism in general. So this is something to talk about. This is something
okay.
to talk
so
about.
So you don't
because,
see
yes.
you don't see the current Turkish-Russian cooperation as being a beginning of a new alliance. You don't see Turkey, for instance, eventually leaving NATO.
Well, here's the thing now. Turkey has purchased the S-400 anti-aircraft missiles. They're pretty much embedded with the Russians in building a new nuclear power plant in southern Turkey and all that. But I don't think that they're actually acting on behalf of a broader Eurasianist direction. They don't embrace truly the Eurasianist dream advocated by Russia right now and China. I don't think they have the wits to follow this kind of a broader project. Their mindset is tied down to their petty national interests around the Turkish, around the Turkish borders of, bordering with Syria, Armenia, Greece, and I don't think they look at the greater picture, that of course would be on bigger and future interest. They're pretty much egoistic, and they're very nearsighted in geopolitical terms. And I believe that that the neo-Ottoman dream that they were pursuing earlier during this decade, as expressed by their former Minister of Foreign Affairs Ahmet Davutoglu, is something that has collapsed, and it's only because of their fault. I don't think that they're looking at the broader picture. It's sad because they could have been part of a greater plan to counterbalance the Zionist occupied West.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's my opinion right here, yes.
Okay. I do have other callers today, but I want to make sure you get a chance to express everything you wanted to express. Do you have other thoughts regarding this?
Well, the situation right now as it is unfolding, it's going to be very interesting in the following months. I'm going to be following it, and I'm going to be talking to you about it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's of interest to you, to the audience of RBN, but I think it's pivotal in understanding the general geopolitical situation in the area, especially when Israel is situated at the center of it. And there are also some other geopolitical and generally political nuances within this framework that should be talked about, and I think that they could be of interest. But no, I don't think there's much else that I would like to talk about other than that there was this incident yesterday here in Greece. We had a helicopter crash, and there were two Russians inside the helicopter. Mm-hmm. One was a Russian Jewish oligarch under the name Mikhail Abramov. Okay. And the other one was the son of the head of the Russian Central Bank.
Okay, we're going up on the break right now, but if you want to, hang on, and okay, we'll talk to you later. Please call frequently. Bye.
You're surely concerned about being informed and being ready for whatever may come. Please consider the following questionnaire as a soul-jarring wake-up call. If you answer no to more than two of these following questions, you probably aren't going to make it through any major disruption in our country. The questions were compiled by people that have been there. Are you really ready? Do you own your own firearm for the primary defense and protection of you and your loved ones? Have you ever been professionally trained to stand against life-threatening behavior? Have you ever practiced enough to fire 500 rounds during a 2 to 4 day time frame, day and night? Can you load, unload, fire, and clear a jam in total darkness? Have all the adults in your household been professionally trained? Are you, life and death, comfortable with your abilities with pistol, revolver, shotgun, and rifle? Are you aware that everything that you do to prepare for an emergency is a waste of time, money, and energy? If you haven't honed your abilities to their highest level to protect and keep what you have, do you have the repair parts that will most likely be needed for each of your firearm, and do you have the ability to install those parts? Could you completely clean every firearm you own? Are you aware that your body won't go where your mind hasn't been? In other words, without proper training, followed by regular practice, you probably will not win a gunfight. Well, how did you measure up? Take the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to start correcting your deficiencies by receiving your Commander Lifetime Membership with Front Sight Firearms Training Facility. A one-time donation to RBN for $500 will give you a Commander Lifetime Membership at Front Sight as a tremendously huge thank you bonus. See details on RBN's webpage to make it happen. The clock is ticking. You had better be ready before it happens.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
TalkRight, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. TalkRight makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download TalkRight today from Google Play or the App Store.
Welcome back to the show, National Jubal Radio. And I think we still have George, because right before the break, George started talking about a helicopter crash involving a Russian Jewish oligarch. Are you there, George?
Right, right. Two days ago, a helicopter crashed with the pilot and two passengers. One of them was a Russian Jewish tycoon oligarch named Mikhail Abramov. He's dead. The other passenger was the son of the head of the Russian central bank that is now wanted by Russia. They're both dead. I mean, I don't know what to make of it, but it looks like Putin has opened deals with some people still right now as we talk. Another thing
so
that I would like to talk about...
Suspicious? There was something suspicious about this helicopter?
Of course there's something suspicious. Of course there's something suspicious. These people don't die like this every day, okay? So I think there's some... It's foul play, but it might be an accident, but who knows, you know. But both people are dead. It's pretty much suspicious, I think. The other thing that I would like to talk about, I would like to alert your listeners to the new article posted on the Occidental Observer by Andrew Joyce regarding how Dugin is viewed from the right. It's an excellent article regarding Dugin's two recent books in 2019. Pretty interesting article and very enlightening. And the last thing I would like to know before I let somebody else talk is the fact that Erdogan is pretty much aware of the Jewish roots of the modern Turkish state, of the Young Turks, and he's pretty much alienated from the state of Israel and the Jewish element in general due to this fact. He's an Islamist, he's a neo-Ottoman, he won't have Jews as his spiritual progenitors, and he's trying to fight that. But in the end, he's not going to win, because these roots go very, very deep, and they're going to come to the surface pretty soon. That's okay. All I want to talk about, and I'll see you guys later. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for your call, and I'll just second that. Anything that Andrew Joyce writes is worth reading. Okay, next let's go to William from Montana. William, welcome to the show.
Good day, Patrick.
Good day.
I want to thank George. When I heard that he was going to be on, I was all ears. I didn't even want to call in, because this, what he's talking about, is a very important missing piece of the puzzle. And okay, most people in the West have no idea about any of the history of Turkey, of the Ottoman Empire, or how important it is. I mean, when he talks about this is a geopolitical subject that has to be understood. I mean, if you don't understand this, you have no way of understanding what's happening in northern Syria. You have no way of understanding what's happening in the Black Sea with Ukraine. I mean, this is so important, and it's such a blind spot. Mm-hmm. In Western understanding. To think of like, oh, Turkey, I know what Turkey is. Well, Turkey is a lot of things, and its history. I mean, if you get into the beginning of the Young Turks, you'll run into Namık Kemal, and he was, operating in the late 1800s, and he was one of the leaders, the intellectual leaders of this Young Turk movement. And one of the things that it was trying to do, I mean, it was a very complex thing, because it was not only sort of based in Islam, but there were a lot of Islamic followers that were trying to say, how do we integrate with Europe? And so these Young Turks, initially, they were very much into bringing a whole bunch of new understandings to this area, to this peninsula.
So we're going to be up on the break in just a minute, but in recent decades, of course, it has been a priority of the Turkish government to integrate with Europe, even gain membership to the EU, or at least close associations. And you're saying that this was a goal from the very start of the Turkish Republic.
Well, it's a little more complex than that. How do they want to join the EU? They want to join it on their terms. And this is one thing that George was alluding to, was, when you say, oh, the Turks are really becoming friendly with the Russians. Oh, no, they're turning their back on Russia. I mean, it's very complex. People say, are they with Russia or are they not with Russia? Well, a lot of people say they are. But they also want to maintain their, I think they have a hope of maintaining their own self within this association.
We've got the music playing, but please hang on and let's talk about this after the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to aroutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. By Christine, great for heart palpitations. By Anne, before I started using this product, every afternoon, my ankles and my hands would be swollen. That doesn't happen anymore. So if that part of their advertising is true, I have to assume that the rest of it is also. Not to mention that when I had my yearly blood test, only a few weeks after beginning to use this product, my cholesterol had dropped over 30 points. I'm going to continue to take it. By Croc, I love this product. It really works. By Brad, works great, thank you. Tell us your story. Get your Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the show, National Bugle Radio, with Patrick Slatter and William from Montana. And William, you were telling us a whole bunch of interesting stuff. The turkey, you got to understand turkey. And, you know, turkey, which has been called Anatolia, which is the central part of Turkey, Asia Minor, it's been called in the past. It has as much a claim as being the crossroads of the world as the adjacent Middle East. And you think of, right, all the empires that have been centered there, the Ottomans, the Byzantine, you get in ancient times, the Hittite Empire. The Iron Age started there with smelting, the Hittite smelting. And of course, the Hittites weren't modern Turks. They were Indo-European people. But the modern Turks, they've got kind of ethnic extension of their own going way into Central Asia. So it's really important. So please continue.
Yeah, I would say, you know, as a geographer, I always start off this way. I'd say people get a map and don't read the names on the map. Just take a look, find Turkey, put your finger on it, and then just step back from the map and look. And you will see that it is just a natural bridge between Asia, you know, or central, Middle East, and Europe. And so in the 1860s, you know, there was a young, you know, like the Young Turks, they were called Young Turks. You can say that the majority of them were Jewish, but there were also, like I said, Namik Kamal, who was one of the leaders, he was actually Albanian. And so when you start going for simple answers,
Said Namik Kamal, that's not Mustafa Kamal, that's not Ataturk, but that's another.
Yeah, Namik Kamal. Yeah. He was a young intellectual, poet, translator. I mean, his father was even like the chief astrologer of the Sultan's palace, and but he was educated. And he traveled a lot in Europe. He was very inspired by the French Revolution. He was also, or the third, the French Third Republic. And one of their chief goals was representative government. Now, this is a real hard sell in this very, in the Ottoman Empire at that time. You know, when you start talking about representative government, I mean, you're already a radical. And so, but because he was so smart and so integrated into the society, and he had the support of a lot of young Turks who were saying that if we're going to be successful, if we're going to enter into the modern world, we have to have some concept of nationalism, some concept of democracy, some concept of representative government, and that was also a big part of this. And so, you know, when I hear that George starts talking about this, I'm all ears, because we need to know more about this, because one of the big questions that a lot of people in the news, is what is this relationship? I mean, is Turkey going over to Russia? I mean, one of the reasons why they're in hot water now is that they're buying, you know, the S-400, you know, system, and the United States is saying, no, you need to buy your defensive weapons from us. And so it's like, see, they're starting to side with the Russians. But one of the things that George brought up was he pointed out that there's kind of a nearsightedness in Turkey, because this could be very valuable for Turkey to actually establish open relationships with Russia and with Asia and with China. But as George pointed out, when he said there's a nearsightedness, and this is true, because I think the leaders, certain leaders in Turkey, really think that they can join, you know, with other countries and still maintain a total independence for the purpose of growing that empire, growing that Ottoman Empire again. I think they have dreams of a new Ottoman Empire, and this gets in the way of simple answers for that region. I think that if you don't understand some of this history, you will not be able to understand, like, what are they now doing? I mean, even I've studied this, and even I, like, what are they up to in northern Syria, and who are they in cahoots with? Mm-hmm. Are they in cahoots with the U.S.? Are they, you know, sort of playing some type of Russian game? I think it's very, very complex. And when
George is enormously
knowledgeable about this, I hope he calls in again and gives us, you know, lesson number two, lesson number three, and lesson number four in this very important history.
Okay, I've got two questions for you, and maybe we'll have to defer to George's next phone call, but regarding Turkey, do you see their, you know, their recent show of independence, and, you know, they're meeting with, you know, they're having summit meetings with Russia, not just with Russia, but with Iran. Is this going to help the Syrian government of President Assad regain control over all of his territories? Are they playing a constructive role towards that? And that's question number one. And then question number two is, are there dealings with Russia? Does this make it easier or more difficult for the Trump administration to finally start developing a cooperative relationship with the Russian government?
Well, you always... You know, like, how many hours do we have to?
I'll try to just tell you that
this is a difficult. You know, you're not. It's like, you know, cleaning out the swamp. You know, why everybody says, "Well, he really failed us there." I think he was in cahoots from the beginning when talking about Trump. You know, do you think the swamp dwellers were just going to say, okay, they won the election, you know, we got to pack up and leave? That's the same way in Turkey and Iran and all of these countries. They have a long history, And there's people within Turkey that are saying, let's embrace Iran, let's embrace, let's have good relationships with Europe, good relationships with Russia. And there's other people that say, don't you realize, don't you remember our history? That's going to lead to, we're going to lose out in this thing again if we don't gain our own strength and our own domination. We're going to get taken for a ride because we're not the most powerful country in the world. You know, so there's a lot of confusion in Turkey as to which way they want to go, and depending upon who you're looking at and what specifically that you're asking about, this discussion can go many different ways. I think they really do. I think the government, Erdogan's government, really wants to assert its own sovereignty while trying to play all of these different powers off for their own benefit. Now, isn't that what most states do? I mean, they're in this game for in many ways self-interest. But I think what George pointed out was that Turkey seems to have this nearsightedness when it comes. There's a great opportunity for them to cooperate economically and in other ways with Russia and Asia. You know, and they've always had this problem for the last 1,000 years. There was always this push and pull across this bridge, which is what Turkey is. It's a bridge between Asia and Europe. And until that thing gets thrashed out, I don't think it's going to be very clear in the near future that they're going to go one way or the other.
Well, listen, we invoked George's name, and he did call back. I have another caller I want to get to and give enough time to, but let's bring on George again.
I'll sign off and listen.
Okay. And so I had asked the question, and so George, do you have an answer for me?
Of course. Can you ask the question again?
Well, I had asked how Erdogan and Turkey's recent policy of meeting directly, not just with the Russians, but with the Iranians, if it's going to help President Assad regain control over all of Syria and once and for all end this civil war, and then does Turkey's role buying weapons with Russia, does this make it easier or more difficult for President Trump and the Trump administration to finally start a cooperative relationship with Russia? But if those were my questions for William, if you had something else you wanted to mention before I move to the next caller, you can do that instead.
Sure, just one word for Turkish policy during the last two decades: naivety. Okay, naivete. So the Turkish establishment thought that they could take advantage of all the benefits that they were enjoying throughout their history from being friends with American establishment and the Jewish diaspora element, so they could advance their neo-Ottoman dreams. Their whole economy was based on this project. Their whole new Ottoman expansionism was based on this relationship. But their naivety drove them to false conclusions. I don't have another answer for this.
Yeah.
The Arab Spring.
Was the attempted coup against Erdogan, which was likely backed by the CIA,
yes.
Is that an example of this naivete?
Well, while the neo-Ottoman dream was based on the assumption that Atlanticism would be backing this whole project, At the same time, Turkey started becoming more and more of a rogue nation. They started pursuing their own agenda. And at some point in time, Erdogan had to go because he was becoming a rogue agent there. And we saw the Jewish support for this, for the state of Turkey, retreating month after month, and now they're in such a predicament that they don't know what to do. I mean, the Kurds are involved right now, and the state of Israel needs geographical strategic depth in the form of a new Kurdish state. Erdogan is in a pretty bad position. And my only explanation for this is the naivete of Turkish politics. I'm sorry, I cannot give another explanation for this phenomenon.
Well, thank you very much.
So, William from Montana, nice to talk to you, sir, and I'll let somebody else talk too. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. All right, and next we have Frank from North Carolina. Frank, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. I may have some news that might come across as a little bit crazy, but I came across this late last night. I couldn't sleep, and I turned on my radio, and I heard an interesting conversation, and I kind of wrote it off as just crackpot, middle-of-the-night radio type stuff. But I had someone look into it for me today just with a simple search engine check. And they did find what appears to be some pretty credible corroborating evidence. My understanding is, if this is true, Donald Trump is a Jew. I know that sounds crazy. Everybody's rolling their eyes. But the word is that he converted to Judaism 2 years ago, about the time that he became president. He was resistant at first, but his daughter and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, were able to talk him into doing it. One man has already died, a Jewish man, a very Zionist Jew, who was glad that Trump had converted to Judaism.
Okay,
but was
so you're not saying he's an ethnic Jew, but you're saying that he has, while in the White House, actually converted to Judaism.
Sometime around the time he became president, I guess.
Of course, his daughter, it's no secret, his daughter did convert to Judaism.
People can look this up. There's some publication online, Israel Today, I believe. You can find this. Just search for Donald Trump converted to Judaism. There's a guy named, what is his name? It might be David, but his last name is Goldberg. He was the one that was trying to get this information out. He's a radical Zionist, and he liked that Trump had become a Zionist Jew, converted, but he was upset that he wouldn't go open and public about it. And the person that he got this from, who worked inside the Trump administration, who found out about this, she was very upset too. She liked the fact that Trump had become a convert to Judaism. But she thought she didn't like it because he was not open about it. She did not want anyone to be Jewish who wasn't openly proud of it. So that apparently is what has caused all this. But apparently they've already killed the guy. Like I said, he was a rabid Zionist. So this is a game changer. This is going to change everything. We're going to separate the men from the boys, because it wasn't Hitler that wants world domination. It's organized Jewry. And I hope you'll pass this on to Dr. Duke. I'm trying to get this information out as quickly as possible, before his handlers, Donald Trump's Jewish handlers, can put up whatever they're going to do to defend this or muddy the waters or whatever. But this could get pretty serious real quick. Because this is deception. It's about deception.
Right. And I mean, I actually doubt it, but it's not as if it would be impossible. You know, he had a family member who converted to Judaism. Sammy Davis Jr. converted to Judaism. So it's not as if it's an impossible thing. I just wonder what really, if that was the case, what he thinks he would get out of it, especially being a crypto convert, who knows? Who knows? But
would that change your
for...
opinion? If this comes out, would it change your opinion of the Trump presidency?
No. I mean, I think the Trump presidency is, it's been coup d'etat, and that would be part of a coup d'etat, wouldn't it? Okay, we'll be right back. You can hang on if you want, Frank.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Kosher-tify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future. Welcome back to the show, National Bugle Radio, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Well, that was an interesting phone call. And just before going to the break, Frank asked me if it would change my opinion of the Trump administration if indeed it were true that President Trump, I guess somewhere around the time of his inauguration, converted to Judaism. And I said, no, it wouldn't. I mean, we can see what's going on with the Trump administration. He had a pretty good, pretty decent campaign platform. He got elected on a platform, first and foremost, of stopping illegal immigration, but also restricting legal immigration. That was his platform, and building the wall. Less prominent, but still legitimate aspects of his platform was improving relations with Russia.
None of that happened. And so why didn't it happen? Was it because he never meant it all along? My, you know, my interpretation of Trump is that he's never been very, very sincere. And this has been pretty obvious. I mean, if you got somebody who calls Chris Christie at the beginning of the campaign, Chris Christie's my friend, he's a good governor. And then, oh, he's the worst governor ever, he's such a disaster. And then when Chris Christie comes around and endorses Trump, oh, he's a great guy, he's a great guy. And, I mean, Trump's really, really transparent in his insincerity. When people talk about politicians being liars, you know, or politicians in general, but Trump in particular, it's like, yeah, so, you know, this was part of the package. So I don't know how sincere he's ever been about anything, but it did seem for a while that his narrow self-interest, and it did get him elected to being president, that his self-interest and our interests overlapped pretty well. And the first few months of his administration, he did try some things. You know, he had the Muslim ban. You could see all these ways that they were opposing him, you know, with the courts opposing him, people from within his administration not following orders, all of this stuff. And then, of course, after about 3 months, you had the bombing of Syria, which was, it was maybe just kind of like a little display, because it didn't usher in a giant American military action in Syria, but it certainly contradicted Trump's campaign promises. And I think it was at that time I started using the term jeu d'etat. I'm pretty sure that's when I started using it. And of course, a year later, something similar happened. Now, I've been using that term jeu d'etat and the various aspects of the jeu d'etat. There's a jeu d'etat. There are the Jews within his administration and within his own family. There are the Jews in the media. There's the Jews in judiciary. There's the Jews in finance. And I felt like, well, at some point, especially, you know, he had some high points, and I thought maybe the highest point of his administration was his first meeting with Kim Jong-un. But it seems like early this year, around the State of the Union address, he threw in the towel. If he had converted to Judaism at some point, well, that would just be part of the Jew d'etat. It would be something I wouldn't have suspected, but it wouldn't fundamentally alter that interpretation that I just enunciated. Well, thank you to my callers. They made for a very, very interesting show. And I'll be back again tomorrow, I think, with Reverend Mark Dankov, and that's always a great show. That will be another exciting episode of National Public Radio.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with FrontSight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, FrontSight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, FrontSight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, domedan, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.